KPX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. President Trump has a busy week of travel ahead with stops throughout Asia in the coming days. He sits down with the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, on Thursday to discuss trade. 25 days into the government shutdown, communities are now bracing for food stamps to run out. Many families are now turning to food banks for help, but those banks are also running low on supplies, with demand doubling in many places. Carl Esquivel is the executive director of the Salvation Army in Aurora, Colorado.
We are already depleting resources all the way to December. This is our attempt of getting the story out there that food pantries, not just ours, but many even smaller food pantries, right, are struggling to be able to meet the needs of our community.
And Hurricane Melissa is bearing down on Jamaica, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic. It's expected to bring heavy rains, flash flooding, and high winds to those countries. So far, four people have died as a result of the storm. This is ABC News. Russia launched new missile and drone strikes across Ukraine overnight. Details from ABC News foreign correspondent Marcus Moore.
Four people were killed and 20 were injured in attacks in Kyiv, the capital. We know that two people were killed and more than a dozen hurt as a result of the strikes there. While in Dnipropetrovsk, which is in the central part of the country, there were more strikes there. An apartment building and also other residential homes were damaged in the strikes. At least two people were killed.
They come after Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky urged President Trump to expand sanctions on Russian oil. The Kremlin says that move will have little economic impact. If you're headed to Chicago O'Hare, be prepared for some delays. The airport says flights are delayed about 15 minutes on average due to an equipment outage. And cancer rates are on the rise, with new data showing breast cancer diagnoses up about 1%, climbing roughly 1.4% for those under 50. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The incomparable Jane Mattner.
I have been in radio for 44 years.
It's incredible.
I wanted to be an actress originally. Radio to me was mind theater. Mm-hmm. I could be anybody.
Yeah.
And people could imagine it. It's like reading a book instead of the movie. Is your mind gets to fill in lots of details. And I think that's part of the genuine experience of radio.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mad City, biking through blizzards since forever. 92.7 WMDX.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Isabella Nieto tells us what doctors want every woman to know.
According to the American Cancer Society, one in eight women in the U.S. will develop breast cancer in their lifetime. Dr. Cecilia Strode is an Aspirus Health breast surgeon.
We would like to see the cancers that we see to be screen detected. And we, for that to happen, we need women to have the screening that is appropriate for them at their particular level of risk.
Family history, genetics, and other health factors can increase your chances of developing breast cancer.
Most patients who get cancer, breast cancer, don't have an actual family history of breast cancer in close relatives.
Strode says patients who have received treatment for other cancers also have a high risk of developing breast cancer.
Women who have high-risk breast biopsies with atypical findings, women who have had chest wall radiation as part of cancer treatment at a younger age, before 30. And then there are some other things as well, but those are the big ones.
Breast tissue density can also increase your risk. Strode says denser breast tissue requires more detailed scans.
For women who have really extremely dense breasts, and that is an official term, extremely dense breasts, MRI imaging is going to be a much better way to screen.
Strode says even women who have had mammograms that appeared normal need to have a clinical breast exam in case they do need a biopsy. Strode recommends women get their mammograms and disclose any changes they have noticed in their breasts to their healthcare provider. For Civic Media News, I'm Isabella Nieto.
And I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. You're listening to Civic Media News.
You're listening to 92.7 WMDX, Madison's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy, highs in the low 50s, chance of showers. For tonight, partly cloudy and a low around 36. Sunshine for Sunday and a high near 60. Monday, sunny with a high around 58. Tuesday, chance of showers and 54.
Currently, 46 degrees.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll look back at the weekend sports and news headlines. Also be joined by our friend and colleague, Jane Matinair of Matinair on Air. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
WMDX, where even the weather has opinions.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Hey, it's Saturday. Welcome to Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, and me, Dr. Tim Slecker. We are in the house. Man, so much to talk about, but I always like to kind of share with you guys that, you know, every Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m., I get to go live with John and Gordy, and just get to talk. But it's kind of funny because they're always like, "Ah, it's Tim Slecker from Busted Pencils, and he's one of those education people that." Well, Tim, what is it, you guys? And it's like educators talking education. They're like, yeah, that's so cool. I'm like, how do you forget educated educators talking education?
I love Jacob. Your catchphrase. What is it again?
Yeah, right.
It's super catchy. I can't remember it though.
I go to bed every night with it stuck in my head, except it's only partially stuck.
It's halfway stuck there. All right, man.
Well, you know, no, but every time they do that, and it's been like 3 weeks in a row now, they always follow it up with, "That's so good. That's just so good." And Jacob, yeah, I'm kind of like, is it, or are you guys like, if it's, I think it's really good. I know Johnny thinks it's really good.
I like things that make sense.
Yeah, right. Educators talking education.
Yeah, right? We have PhDs in education, and we're educators. That would make us the most at the highest level educated educators talking education. And as we get older, Tim, we can throw another E on there. Experienced educated educators talking education, or just talking experiences. The more we age and just tell stories. But also, Tim, it's morning. It's Thursday morning. It's early. Is that 7:30 your or 6:30 your time?
No, it's 6:30 in the Civic
in Central time.
Civic Media listening area. It's 7:30 for me. Yeah. Maybe they haven't had that
4:30 a.m. for me. I've opted out of that lovely invitation that John and Gordy sent our way, but I love that you're with them.
It is. It's a good time. It's fun, and we get to, you know, get to share a lot about what's going on in the show. And I actually appreciate those guys all the time.
Likewise,
you know, inviting
best breakfast I ever had in Madison, and best breakfast company I've ever had in Madison. Tim, we got to have we've done the breakfast show with them.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, what a fun thing down at the diner.
You
got a stack of flapjacks and
eggs medium and with sausage. And, oh, you know, talking there, and I had the, you know, the kind of semi cooked egg yolk running down my goatee. Man, that is truly talk radio right there, Jacob. You're imagining and going, I wish I was there.
Yeah, I wish I was there to watch egg yolk drip off of Tim. That's the mental image that I really needed today, Tim. So thank you very much. You've brought it home to me with your, I mean, the you should educated, write books.
The educated egg man.
Educated yes. egg man. Oh, man. All of a sudden flashes to the Beatles. I am the egg man.
Okay, that's right.
There you go. The walrus. I've never understood the connection between the egg man and the walrus. I'll just point that out.
Somewhere in the goo-goo-ka-choo.
Okay, way, way, way off track. But yes, it is our Saturday show. And for all the civic media listeners right now listening to the show on the radio, in the hot tub with your portable sound device.
So many teachers out there with full hot tubs on a Saturdays, you know, so many educators.
As you're out there
hot tubbing on the weekends,
or you know, the channel surfers, like, what is this? Stop right there. I know you're surfing, you hear us, you're gonna want to listen to the rest of the show. But actually, yeah, thank you all of the civic media people who are actually listening to the show at 3 o'clock and, you know, in your car or at home. We appreciate all the time that you commit to spending some time with some educated educators who talk education. And and for all of you downloaders, we love you just as much too. You know, just always want to point that out and say thank you to everybody who listens to the educated educators who talk education. You know, and hey, thinking about that, it's okay to let people know, first of all, about the show, and it's also okay, you know, to sign in to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave us a comment. Let us know what's happening. Let us know, you know, what you're thinking about. Let us know how horrible we make you feel if that's what happens. We want to know. Jacob, I got a little grin out of you on that one.
Tim, I think a lot of people out there have been thinking about following us and subscribing and doing all these things and spreading the word, and they just thought, but Tim probably wouldn't want me to do that. So I'm glad you're finally putting the word out there that yes, we do approve of engaging with the show.
We approve of that. And you know what? And for anybody who's sitting there going, but I want to do it right now. Well, hey, 608-557-8577 is always available. 608-557-8577. Voicemail and no sensor required in the voicemail. Or you can also use that number to text and, you know, love to hear from you. And always, why aren't you guys talking about, hey, the reason we're not talking about it is because you didn't say, why aren't you guys talking about X? Because it, well, not X or Twitter, but all that, but just give us it everything. Okay. Look, you know, there's been so much going on in education. Johnny, I just don't want to talk about X, Twitter, all that stuff.
But you're going to quickly pivot to AI. Watch everybody. Here we go.
You know, because, well, it's just moving in that direction. And yes, okay, as Johnny has pointed out, I worship. Actually, the last time we listened, I've been elevated to a practitioner, a monsignor, a minister, whatever, you know, fits you. I'm now that person in the Church of AI. And I guess I am, but I came across I didn't come across the post. It was sent to me by a faculty member at the institution I'm at. And, you know, contextualize this. I have been organizing a group of faculty across multiple disciplines to have a discussion about how this institution should be implementing and or teaching about AI in higher education. For people going, well, yes, I am an administrator at a higher education institution, and talking about AI, what should we be doing? I will point this out too. If you're going, well, why? Well, the beginning of the semester, actually in the summer, OpenAI, ChatGPT, and ASU, Arizona State University, announced the first ever kind of like marriage. ChatGPT, ASU, totally embedded with each other. That means all faculty, all staff, all students have full access to powerful ChatGPT and all kinds of other things. That's been happening. Google has partnerships. But yesterday, also, Anthropic got in the deal with Pitt. Pitt University and Anthropic have entered into the same type of deal that OpenAI and ASU is, where Claude now will be accessible to any faculty, staff, or student who's enrolled at Pitt has now access to Claude. That's Anthropic's bot. And what are the implications of this? And one of the things that, you know, we've been talking about at my institution is going like, what should we be doing? What's the responsibility of a higher education institution, a college, you name it, when it comes to AI? Should we be teaching it? Should we be having conversations about how it is, you know, the scourge of modern writing faculty? And I think that throughout all those conversations, the group that I have, again, is very varied about where they're at. But one of those faculty members sent me, not the group right away, just sent me, because I think he was afraid to send it as a group message, but a piece that framed, what if everything we're doing in higher education because of AI is actually, we're just kind of staring at the end of traditional higher education. And when I mean that, a four-year degree, right? And okay, I know there are all kinds of ways, adult learners and stuff, but the traditional four-year degree, kind of residential experience, why would anybody pay any institution of higher education the tuition that goes with a four-year degree? And this author pointed out, so let's call it a 4-minute mile, when AI could probably deliver the learning more effectively in a 2-minute mile, translate that to 2 years. So understanding that, this is kind of the premise put forward. As a parent, my son or daughter is about to enroll in University B at $29,000 a year over the course of 4 years, when AI could teach them more effectively in probably 2 years. Why would anybody pay the amount of money for a 4-minute mile? And I know where you're going to go, Johnny, but if the 4-minute mile is really actually a 2-minute mile now, I know we're cutting in low, so I'll give you a little bit of time, Johnny, to comment before we head into the break.
Tim, you laid a lot out there, and I think it's interesting stuff. I love hearing about the work that you and other educated educators are doing to examine the big changes, not only in higher ed, but in learning and what we know, and in changing the structures of schooling, because what we know isn't always been what we do as educators. But I'll come back after the break and really dive into this. I got questions about if anybody can even really run a 2-minute mile. Has it been done? Or are we just trying to cram more into less time, make it sexy, package it, and say, this is the newer, better, bad way to do this work. Come do it with us. Everything's changed. get the most bang for your buck. We'll come back and dive into that when we come back. Busted Pencils.
WMDX, talk radio for people who read past the headline.
Remember when they used to ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? At Bank of America, we ask every day, what would you like the power to do? When you work here, you help build businesses, inspire communities, and forge legacies. And now we've raised our U.S. minimum wage to $25 an hour. So the opportunity to do more also comes with competitive pay. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/25. Bank of America, proud to be an equal opportunity employer.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the recombobulation area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the recombobulation area.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Yeah, we're back. Yo, oh, you're Johnny. I'm sorry, man.
I'm gonna go quick
because I know where you're going. Hey, it's Tim, Johnny, Jacob, Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. AI, can it help the 2 minute mile? Actually, we're referring to a Substack post by Hollis Robbins, the 2 minute mile problem, where hey, AI can help us run a 2 minute mile. In other words, shorten the time it takes for a four-year degree. Johnny Lupinacci, you got a problem with this.
I got a lot of them, but I also really like, I think, where this article provocatively takes us. And I'll come back around to saying, like, I'm excited to hear about, you know, faculty anywhere, educators, whether you're, you know, K-12 teachers out there working in your districts, or whether you're part of higher education institution like Tim's talking about. His faculty and he were working on this today. I think it's a important and necessary and extremely timely and long overdue conversation to be having. But again, Tim, you know me, I love a good metaphor and I hate a bad one. And I'm not sure whether or not this is a good metaphor or it is. And it's really, and I'm going to say why I have problems with it. First of all, no human being can run a 2 minute mile. At least it hasn't been recorded as such. So the idea, what came to mind in the hook in the sort of, I love how this article talks about the last mile and the amount of discernment and kind of, you know, human thoughtfulness that's part of the last mile, or like when we're finalizing a decision, or in the context of mapping it onto higher education, sort of culminating your learning. You are going out into, you know, your careers with, like, for a lack of better terms, a capstone experience where you have been learning things, but also applying them and mentored into, you know, what this person shares as the last mile being extremely valuable, and has said over time that evidence has shown that mentorship and close kind of relationships, especially related to professional pathways, like career kind of apprenticeships and things as part of that last mile, have been shown to be not only incredibly effective, but important. So, you know, when we interview, to kind of speed that up for listeners, when researchers interview people who are incredibly successful in their careers, and they talk about their journey to that success, and they share powerful moments of their own learning, the mistakes they made, the things that they found incredibly helpful to their profession. They talk about, you know, how important mentorship was. They talk about, you know, teachers that they have that really took the time to not only teach them content, right? To not only teach them the facts, say if you're an engineer out there listening, not just the calculus teacher or the computer programmer who helped you through things, but that teacher who really built a connection and a relationship, or that early career mentorship you got in your profession, right? That really carried you into that next level, right? That helped you take that big step up into being highly effective, feeling proficient in your career pathways. You know, that's the ultimate goal. Tim, so when that's the last mile. Then the piece you share with me talks about, but kids these days are coming in. And I think this is a provocative and important conversation, because the author may be right on this. Okay. Kids are coming in prepared for the 2 minute mile, which if the intention is to hint there, hey, 2 minute miles aren't possible, then I love this article, because we're setting ourselves up to fail. If the goal is to do things faster and supposedly more efficient, well, at what cost, right? Because if we're preparing, or if we're getting together to talk about how to brace ourselves for the expectation of the 2 minute mile, and we cave to providing 2 minute mile style training or education, well, then we're all duped into thinking it's humanly possible to run the 2 minute mile. So I don't think the article is about speed, but the metaphor is. But there's also an argument that's often made about AI, is that it speeds things up. And you can only speed things up until you're limited by the humanness that we're all functioning in. In terms, like just recently this week, we had a major shutdown of a lot of education programs, a lot of university campuses. Right. We didn't have a big snowstorm. We didn't have a natural disaster. We had Amazon Web Services went out for a few hours.
Somebody tripped on the cord and out came the plug.
Well, a little bit more complicated than that. But in essence, Tim, you're right. Like, that's the new snow day. I mean, things came to a halt. And, you know, so we can't get on the learning management system. We can't utilize our tools. We can't get the plugins correct for these. So, you know, our technological dependencies mislead us into things like believing we could run a 2 minute mile. You can't. At least last I checked, and I could be wrong. Hopefully Jacob fact checks me and says, Johnny, completely wrong in this. But to my knowledge, no one's run a 2 minute mile. I remember all of us, you remember learning about the 4 minute mile. I mean, that was a huge accomplishment, and fabulous runners have done that since. But
I appreciate you recognizing that.
That's an impossibility. Right. So I love this talk about, are we talking about efficiency? Are we talking about speeding things up? Are we talking about a generation that's being prepped for something that is impossible? Maybe all of it. But what I'm most excited about, Tim, and when we come back from the break, we're going to hear about it, is we are rethinking things, and we're long overdue for that, because, boy, I'll tell you, we've known too much and not done things with what we've known for too long. So listeners, it's Saturday. We got heavy in here. Busted Pencils, educated educators talking education. When we get back, stick with us.
92.7 WMDX. News that thinks, talk that matters. Madison, Wisconsin. Students, government, lakes, and 92.7 WMDX.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. President Trump has a busy week of travel ahead with stops throughout Asia in the coming days. He sits down with the Chinese president Xi Jinping on Thursday to discuss trade. 25 days into the government shutdown, communities are now bracing for food stamps to run out. Many families are now turning to food banks for help, but those banks are also running low on supplies, with demand doubling in many places. Carl Esquivel is the executive director of the Salvation Army in Aurora, Colorado.
We are already depleting resources all the way to December. This is our attempt of getting the story out there that food pantries, not just ours, but many even smaller food pantries, right, are struggling to be able to meet the needs of our community.
And Hurricane Melissa is bearing down on Jamaica, Haiti, and the Dominican Republic. It's expected to bring heavy rains, flash flooding, and high winds to those countries. So far, four people have died as a result of the storm. This is ABC News.
It's the Packers and the Steelers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports from Pittsburgh, where the Packers take on the Steelers here on Sunday Night Football. Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin says his team is focused on two players, defensive end Micah Parsons and Packers running back Josh Jacobs.
Looking at Green Bay's offense, it starts with Josh Jacobs, and not only because of the circumstances that we're in coming off of a subpar performance in terms of stopping a run, but he's just a catalyst for a lot that goes on with them. He's a nuts and bolts player, man. He's really good. He's got a great run demeanor. Michael Parsons, can't say enough about him and his talents. You saw just the other day what he's capable of doing, and I think that's really indicative of the impact that a guy like him has.
Tomlin has been the Steelers head coach now 19 years. That's the most in the NFL. I asked Matt LaFleur about Tomlin's success.
I wish we all knew the secret sauce, because he's been the model of consistency, and he's used a lot of different people to do it.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Some of you might remember Jeremy Renner from the less popular Bourne movie. It was pretty subpar, although not entirely his fault. In 2023, on New Year's Day, the mayor of Kingstown actor was seriously injured after saving his nephew from being crushed by a 14,000-pound snowplow. The Hurt Locker star had 30 broken bones, including 14 broken ribs, a spinal fracture, a broken tibia, a punctured lung, a sliced liver, a broken and dislocated collarbone, and a major head laceration. Season 4 of yet another Taylor Sheridan show, The Mayor of Kingstown, drops October 26th on Paramount. This is the age of the re-release, and you can add Wedding Crashers to the list of films that you can see soon on the big screen. The Owen Wilson Vince Vaughn comedy celebrates its 20th anniversary by heading back to theaters. Warner Brothers says the film will hit theaters again December 4th and 11th. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 92.7 WMDX.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy, highs in the low 50s, chance of showers. For tonight, partly cloudy and a low around 36. Sunshine for Sunday and a high near 60. Monday, sunny with a high around 58. Tuesday, chance of showers and 54.
Currently, 46 degrees.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
What is your favorite or least favorite word? Cinnamon. Love that word. And it's a superfood. I don't like the word buttress just because I'm immature. Pecan.
My favorite word is scoundrel. I would also say buttocks.
I said buttress and you said buttocks. John in Madison says words with silent letters bug me too. Pneumonia. Dumb. Funny because my name is John.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
John Peterson and Gordy Young.
Monday morning, we'll talk to Sharon Bowie. He'll tell us about a celebration of transformation.
And building permit for the John and Gordy Big Balls Room is off.
The John and Gordy Show, weekday mornings 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Oh, love that when we come back. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. John and Gordy, it is educated educators talking education. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board. Me, Dr. Tim Slicker, we are here. Okay, AI, 2 minute mile, 4 minute mile. I get it. Bad metaphor. All right.
Or maybe great one. Okay. That's the thing. Could be brilliant. That's the thing I love about it.
I want to go back though to where I see this, and I know that you were getting at it too, which is she really points out, first of all, forget about AI or not. I think what she does a lot here is says, if we were better teachers, we could do a whole lot more. Because Johnny, I gotta point out that when you said, when I'm reach my ultimate success and I look back, I gotta say that Dr. Harris, my chemistry teacher, is not someone I attribute my successes to.
Tim, the teacher hater.
I do not look upon and boy, this is gonna maybe freak people out, but the majority of my history and or sociology and anthropology types of faculty are not people I hold up as going, man, if it wasn't for them. Largely, I would go, thank God I made it out of those places. And this is just to illustrate where I think the other part is that teaching is and we've talked about this with Mike Bigley from up in CESA 4 that look, we've known for the longest time that for every year a child or anybody spends in formal education, what we call engagement, in other words, their interest at being in school declines. Okay. Why is that? Well, I got to say that here, let's make this very simple, because sit and get is a really bad framing for how we teach and learn. And I know there are exceptions, but for the most part, the model, sit, listen, and get, is the model of education. And when you think about that, okay, forget about AI. That's just not good learning. But now, sitting and getting, even if we say there is an amount of information that is absolutely potentially saying necessary to go forward. And if it is an accumulation of factual knowledge of things like that, why would anybody pay for a bad faculty member to teach a 3-credit class over 15 weeks when, let's just talk about history of the American Revolution. I right now can jump into ChatGPT and I can say, look, I have a college level need to understand the American Revolution. Chat, my buddy, I need you to organize a tutoring program that works with me until I have mastered all of the knowledge for history of the American Revolution. I could do that on my own time. I can do that. And it adjusts to whether I understand. It makes adjustments. It changes. I can tell it, hey, you're boring me, and it will make it more interesting. Why would anybody pay for Dr. So-and-so to drone on for 15 weeks about American history? Johnny.
Tim, here's the thing. Tim's got a special side of him this week. Educated educator, teacher hater. But Tim, here's some, I'm going to use a couple of metaphors here, since that's the theme of the show, is wild metaphors. It's like wild, wild metaphors. Let's go for them. You need water, right? You drink water when you need water.
Got my life straw in my backpack.
Great. Great, Tim. Well, there's this way of getting water. It's not the best way. It's called waterboarding. I'm going to get you your water by waterboarding you. Not great, right? Your memory of coming to me for water isn't so good. We can agree on that, but you still need water. Well, Tim, I'll tell you what. Johnny waterboards to get water, but you could go on a computer and you could Google, or you could use some AI to talk about, do you need water or not? It can't give you water. Okay. So just because I waterboard to give water doesn't mean, one, that every teacher shares knowledge how, or like water in this metaphor, like I do. So like your example of the bad teacher and your experiences with so many bad teachers, which counter argument to that could be is they were great teachers for someone else, just not for you, but you did connect with somebody. And that's ultimately the goal of education, is that all students find some kind of connection.
And also, there's a point there. Hold that one, because we got to hit that.
Well, also here, like, you, life isn't about working with everything that works just for you. So the life skill you also learned that Mr. Harrison, or whoever you called your poor chemistry teacher, is probably like crying in his car right now listening, like, but Tim was such a good chemistry student, right? But this idea, like, how he was not helpful to your career also is helpful to your development and your maturation and the skills you brought into adulthood of, like, hey, everybody doesn't get along the same way. We still work together and figure out how it goes. I agree with you that every student deserves to have an awesome teacher. And I agree with you that this is what I mean by this is a conversation I think long overdue. Like, we've known too much that we're not doing. Mm-hmm. Because before AI exploded as speeding things up to the so-called possible 2-minute mile that hasn't happened humanly yet, I emphasize the humanness, because all this learning still has a human component to it, right? It's not computers teaching other computers, unless it becomes that, which as a faculty member, I have heard students say, we have faculty who utilize AI to generate assignments for us. We use AI to do the assignment, and then they do grading using AI. So it's just AI trading information, right? That's ultimately a loss all the way around. But this idea that what we know about active learners, I would argue that anybody just leaning on sit and get, right, is about 30 years behind on learning research. Mm-hmm. And there is a lag, but I would also argue that it is the responsibility of groups of teachers. So whether those are professors at an institution, or whether those are, you know, teachers in any high school or any district, or school leaders, administrators in higher ed, or, you know, principals and superintendents in our districts, it is all of our jobs to say, hey, there's this thing we need you to learn to do better, and it's to teach better all the time. Great teachers are constantly improving. Just like, I'll use another metaphor here. It's wild metaphor day. Like, if you're a sports fan, the game changes, and the true greats change their game with the changes in the game. Right? Like, oh man, wow, they're calling fouls now even closer than they ever called them. So it's extra important for me to be a great free throw shooter. You can't get away in the NBA without being able to sink your easy buckets, right? So great players adapt and change with the game. And great teachers, which should be the mark for everybody in a classroom, right, are constantly adapt and giving new information, or not even new, but good information. So I'm here. I know you're not anti-teachers, Tim.
No, because
that last sentiment kind of felt like bad teachers out here delivering an awful product are about to get replaced by machines, and the machines are going to do way better. And in fact, faster.
I think they should be replaced if that's what they're still doing, the sit and get. And actually, Johnny, what you pointed out, though, is that a great teacher right now would acknowledge and recognize the importance, and in one way, the irrelevancy of so much of what we have done in the past, particularly on the sit and get model, that if you are engaging in sitting and getting right now,
That in and itself is bad teaching. But to level up at this point, Johnny, change your game, as you just said, and acknowledge and recognize that right now, actually, those students need you as that mentor, as that guide, as that coach. They don't need you droning on about all of the stuff you know that you want them to know that you know. They can get all of the stuff that you know more efficiently, probably more effectively, by using some form of an AI tool, which actually now opens up the game for the game changer of a faculty member to step in and go, now that we are free from the sit and get lecture, let me give you all of what I got in mentorship. Let's take a field trip. Let's dig deep into the things that you're learning while you're doing this independently at your own speed with an AI that can adjust to your skill level, to the things that you need to know. And let's meet back at the nature preserve, and let's look deeply at deforestation, and let's look at how sustainability really comes to life. Okay, that's what you're talking about. And so that's where I don't take the 2 minute mile as a, oh my God, I'm not gonna have a job. I take the 2 minute mile as going, what an opportunity for faculty, for departments, for colleges, for universities as a whole to be freed from that sense of needing to spend hours and hours and hours of instructional time, when actually students and families can now pay actually for an incredible, engaged, experiential, fully deep experience over 4 years that is something that you could never get when actually the four-year degree. Think about this now. What institution is going to take this moment and go, you know why you're paying for a 4 minute mile or for a 4 year degree? Because when you get to this campus, we're not talking about extracurriculars in the evening when you have time potentially between classes. You want to be the president of two wildlife societies that are connected to your major? That's part of your day because you have time. We're providing those experiences. That is where I see the challenge at in this piece and the opportunity, particularly for institutions that people are questioning the value, questioning the need, questioning why even pay for 4 years when I could get, because you're paying not for 15 weeks of droning on, you're paying for 4 years of an experience you're never going to get anywhere with faculty or those mentors, those guides who, when you look back, you will go, wow, thank you for those 4 years of that deep, deep, deep experience. That's a challenge I see in this, Johnny.
Sign me up for that, Tim. Sign me up for that, bud.
Busted Pencils. Yeah, we're fully leaded. We're educated educators talking education. How we put this together, well, you got to come back.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The North Carolina legislature passed a new gerrymandered congressional map October 22nd, likely adding a GOP congressional seat to offset expected 2026 midterm losses in the U.S. House. Legislators diluted black voting power to do it, but say it was for partisan reasons. The map likely gives Republicans an 11-3 advantage in a purple state where President Trump won by only 3.3% in 2024. State leaders went out of their way to say it was manipulated to help maintain GOP control of the U.S. House. State Senator Ralph Hayes said, "The motivation behind this redraw is simple and singular. Draw a new map that will bring an additional Republican seat to the congressional delegation." Why admit the cheating? The U.S. Supreme Court's Rucho decision said gerrymandering for partisan reasons was a state political matter, not a matter for the federal courts. For the moment, racial gerrymandering is still illegal under the Voting Rights Act, so the deliberate admission of partisan gerrymandering helps to create an alibi when the case reaches federal court. The new map changed only Congressional District 1, a currently competitive Northeast district where black Congressman Don Davis won by 2%. A North Carolina Black Alliance analysis shows it shifted 8% of black voters into adjoining redder districts, diluting black voting power and tilting District 1 Republican. We've linked to more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
Looking to strengthen the bond with your pup? Dane County Humane Society offers a variety of dog training classes led by certified trainers. Classes are designed to help you and your furry friend learn new skills, improve behavior, and deepen your connection. Whether your dog is a curious puppy, an independent teenager, or a lifelong learner, DCHS has the tools and expertise to help you set the stage for a successful year ahead. Visit giveshelter.org/dogtraining to register today.
My name's John Driscoll, proud member of the Patriotic Millionaires. When I was CEO at CareCentrix, I doubled entry-level wages. The impact? Productivity went up, turnover went down, and the company was successful. When employees are off the clock, they're real consumers, the consumers that drive the economy with their spending. By paying employees a fair wage, we're actually helping out all of us in giving our economy the best chance to succeed. I'm John Driscoll. I'm a Patriotic Millionaire, and I approve this message.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Yeah, we're back. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators, talking education, talking bad metaphors, talking about changing the game. We're actually referring to a Substack post that came out last week, the 2-minute mile problem. There'll be a link in the show description so you can go to it, written by Hollis Robbins. Is higher ed ready for acceleration? So much in there. In fact, Jacob during the break went, well Jacob, you tell us what where did we go wrong?
I think about maybe 4 minutes into the show, the metaphor got us off track. And then we had a very fruitful 48-minute talk on the metaphor and its validity, which was really good. I thought that that was a good chat about the metaphor. And, you know, could Usain Bolt run a mile in 2 minutes and get a college degree in the process or not? All that, very good. But if I read the article correctly, and I did it at night with my glasses off, so I don't know if I did, but the main two words I got from the article were ka-chow, okay? Because if you've seen the Disney Pixar movie Cars, in that movie, they talk about how Route 66 became antiquated and not used so much because it fell behind the times when the interstate highways came out there. I feel like this article is saying AI is like the new interstate, and if we're not ready, we don't adapt our infrastructure, we're going to end up like Radiator Springs, getting passed up by new technology that we weren't ready for. Is that right? Is that what the article was really trying to tell us, Tim?
Yes, Jacob. And yeah, you know, so maybe there's a part two next Saturday to get to this because, yeah, well, you know, it really is. And it's you know, kind of she attacks the whole idea that we attribute time in a seat to learning and also time in a seat to some form of a credentialing. And if, you know, anybody in higher ed knows this, you know, the Carnegie unit, the unit really is a measure of time. 37.5 hours equals 3 credit hours according to college. And so then the accumulation of 120 at least Carnegie units, that is proof that you've earned a credential. And she's kind of going like, that's just not true. Maybe it was never true, but my God, why in the world would we ever be using this system of counting, truly counting time in seat as, you know, evidence of learning? And why would any parent pay for time in seats, Carnegie units, when that's a disaster? So yeah, Jacob, I mean, that was the point. Johnny's got a reaction though. Come on, man.
Again, I love this because it's saying just because things have always been one way doesn't mean that they need to stay that way. And I love Jacob's comparison, you know, to one of my most favorite franchises in all of film. You know, Cars is a classic, and what a great, you know, metaphor, as we're talking wild metaphor about, you know, Radiator Springs. And I think it's an accurate one. Higher ed is facing some Radiator Springs kinds of conversations right now. But Tim, I'm a big don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And, you know, that was part of what we look at with that. There is a need for time together, and there is somewhere in there you can speed things up. But if you cut back too much, then you slip into this, like, why even do it at all? Or everyone can just do it on their own. And although that's wonderful dream to have, you can't be great at something that you don't put time into. So, you know, maybe it's not a correct, unit of measurement, the Carnegie, you know, unit right now, you know, but, you know, to break it down for listeners, especially in higher ed, it was always say like 1 credit hour, right? If you're taking a 3 credit hour class, you imagine 1 credit hour is really 3 hours of work outside of the 1 hour that you're in the class. If it's a 1 credit hour class, but it's 3 credit hours. So it's a basically like 3 hour class. Well, that's, you know, three times. Each hour, that's at least 6 to 9 hours of work outside of that, just being in that class.
Right.
Because at some point, Tim, you do got to be accountable, even if I do go down this pathway that I'm not a big fan of, but for some learners, it works great, of completely autonomous learning with, you know, computer programs and things. It still tells you a relative amount of time you're going to take to complete the module or go through it. It just doesn't hold the next module necessarily for another week and a week. So we're like 15 weeks of curriculum, you might knock it out in 3 weeks.
Well, right. Speaking of that with time, we have no more Carnegie units left in this moment. So
we're now running out of time.
Now it's time. And we're going to come back to this for your moment of Zen. The rule of law does not do away with the unequal distribution of wealth and power, but reinforces that inequality with the authority of law. It allocates wealth and poverty in such complicated and indirect ways as to leave the victims bewildered.
Hey, listeners, hopefully we didn't leave you bewildered today. I know I'm still a little befuddled, but what a show. Thanks for listening to the Busted Pencils broadcast today. And remember, you can grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, the Civic Media website. You know, don't miss us this week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays for our podcast drops. And thanks for busting pencils with us. We are the Blue Collar Scholars, Tim and Johnny. Hey, keep busting pencils.
This is 92.7 WMDX Columbus, Madison's home for real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. President Trump is headed to Asia this week for summits across the region, including stops in Malaysia, Japan, and South Korea. Speaking to reporters on Air Force One during a refueling stop in Qatar earlier today, Trump was asked what he wants to come away with from his meeting with China's President Xi Jinping, which is scheduled for Thursday.
A complete deal. I want our farmers to be taken care of, and he wants things also. We're going to be talking about fentanyl, of course. You know, fentanyl's killing a lot of people. It comes from China.
Trump says he thinks there's a really good chance of making a very comprehensive deal. The Pentagon is now deploying an aircraft carrier to the waters off the coasts of Venezuela and Colombia. It comes after 10 strikes from the U.S. on boats the Trump administration says are being used for drug trafficking in the region. And Jamaica is bracing for Hurricane Melissa, which today was upgraded to from a tropical storm. This is ABC News. New government.